UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
Locked on the V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Tim Sullivan going to join us in a moment or two. Glad that you're with us as well on this Tuesday. Louisville football and I don't want to say impressive because I don't know what the word would be. You got it's a significant. How about that? A significant game last night where they played. Hard. They played. They fought. They stayed together. They showed much more discipline, better coaching, everything across the board to walk away and feel like there were things that you could feel you could build on. The question is, do they build on them? Because that's going to be the bottom line going forward. These next two games, they're 26.5-point favorites against Eastern Kentucky, and they need to follow that up. That's going to be, again, the bottom line because we were talking, there was a relatively kind chatter about the team after Alabama last year, but I didn't get the feeling the vibe was at all the same. That was a game you were just trying to find some bright lights, and then they struggled in their next game, in the Indiana State, I guess it was, in the monsoon, and we wrote that off because, well, it was such bad weather. And the bottom line is that the vibe last night was completely different. I mean, they were very unfortunate to not go in the locker room tied at halftime, and the crowd was just so involved in it, and they had moments where they played really, really high level football, and it's hard to not look at it and have taken a lot of positives away. I think if you're not, I think you're choosing to focus on the negative. And you could say, well, you're doing the opposite. I'm not choosing to focus on anything. I'm just observing, and my observation was a pretty significant night for a team that went through a record-settingly poor year the year before. And I think that there were a lot of reasons to look at this team and say, I guess as our next guest writes, the word would be respectability. And I think that's kind of a good way to look at it, as Tim Sullivan from the Courier-Journal joins us right now. And Tim, your take on it was not only is it respectability, but ahead of schedule to some degree, because people thought this was going to be a continuation of last year's dumpster fire, and instead they came out and gave a pretty good account of themselves. So what's the significance of it, and are we getting ahead of ourselves by making too much about it?
You know, this is the data point that we have, and I think that in a normal year, which would be a year unlike last year or following last year, you know, you would think a ninth-rated Notre Dame team would beat a normal Louisville team, maybe by two touchdowns or more. But the way this game unfolded, and you know how. There was still drama in the second half. I think it certainly gave people the feeling that that the worst is over and that Scott Satterfield has at least turned things in a more positive direction. Whether that is going to translate to a lot of victories this year, I mean that's probably ambitious, but I don't think we're going to see 50 points week after week scored on this defense, and I thought that there were enough moments and enough potential in that offense that I think this team can be competitive. And I, as you said, as I was driving into the office, other than Clemson, I don't see a lot of games on the schedule that are completely out of reach.
And again, that's the bottom line, is after a fan base that really had to suffer through non-competitive games with a team that, whether you think they were the catalyst or the coaches were, they collectively had basically checked out last year. And they fought right till the end, and, you know, it's what I said. Isn't that kind of what we have to look at? I know there's some fans, when I brought this up, like, oh, stop with all that. You know, do you realize what kind of program you're talking about? We've had Heisman winners here. We've won, you know, major bowl games. We're not about embracing just effort. But I said, it's not like you want to belabor last year, but, Tim, if you don't talk about last year, you can't put anything that goes on this year in the proper context, which is why, I mean, if they get to four wins, they win the next two games, if they do, and then they somehow get a couple of conference wins and they're doing all the things he talked about, they're working hard and they're getting better, that's a four-win season worth, if not celebrating, at least acknowledging. So that's why if you don't bring up last year, you don't do it justice, because other than that, you'd say a four-win season, oh, what a disaster. But if that's what it turns out to be based on how they get there, I don't think that's really true. So you got to kind of keep last year, at least in the early part of this year, as part of the discussion, don't you?
Sure. I mean, context is everything when you're trying to evaluate a sports franchise or a college team. You know, where they came from, how much progress they're making is the real measuring stick. I don't think any Louisville fan in his right mind would have gone into the season expecting a championship. But, you know, there was a certain amount of dread that last year, you know, might be repeated or close to it, that, you know, the talent level had dipped, the recruiting had suffered. You were relying to a dangerous extent on walk-ons. And, you know, as the season goes on and injuries accumulate, I think depth is going to be a real problem for this team. And so the need to get a few wins locked up early, I think, is paramount. But, you know, what we saw last night was a team that was still energetic and dangerous at various points in the game and fairly late in the game. And a couple of plays turn out differently. You know, this is a potentially a fourth-quarter ball game. You know, you don't have three straight fumbles. I've never seen that before, and I think Scott Satterfield said he hadn't either. I don't know how, if you're a Louisville fan, you come away from that game and not be encouraged.
I agree with you. Tim Sullivan from the Courier-Journal with us here on the V-Show on this Tuesday. In your column today, you quoted the linebacker, C.J. Avery, who said, I think we played pretty well. I just think we beat ourselves with mistakes of our own. That's why they scored on a couple of drives that they scored. But overall, I think we played well. The attitude and the effort part that we've been preaching since day one, I think it will all come together. And then you said, these are your words now, the next paragraph, though it seems too simplistic perhaps to be true, the difference between giving a darn and giving up is a function of Satterfield embracing players who were made to feel estranged and inadequate under Petrino. Again, not trying to bury and pile on last year, but it's difficult to have watched last night with basically the same core of players and see a much more cohesive, disciplined, enthusiastic, determined group, and not give the coaching staff some credit for that. And I don't completely know why they divorced themselves emotionally from the team last year, but I think that is a very, very big part of the early part of this year, is healing those wounds and making these players feel like, you know, because, you know, Tim, you could say whatever you want, but until adversity comes, players don't really know how you're going to react. And so they saw how this staff acted after their first loss. And I think that what Scott Satterfield said to the media, based on your conversations and hearing the players, sounds like that was the exact same message he gave the players, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a video circulating of his post-game remarks to his team, and they were very similar to what he said to the media. I mean, my one complaint with Scott Satterfield is he talks too fast if you're trying to take notes. I don't know if that's a fixable problem or not, but you know, he has, from day one, I think, had very realistic expectations, has changed the culture. You know, and there frequently are going to be stories when a coach leaves and things have turned badly, a lot of piling on goes on, and some of that may be deserved. Much of it may be deserved. I wonder personally how much the loss of his father had to do with Bobby Petrino's demeanor last year. And
I never thought about that.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to him about that, and he just didn't want to do the interview. I respect that, and I understand that. But, I do think that, we sometimes forget that coaches are human beings, and they go through the same travails that the rest of us do. And the loss of a parent, particularly one who'd been kind of a mentor to you in terms of your chosen field, may have hit him pretty hard. I'm not here to make excuses for Bobby Petrino, he did a lot of things and behaved as historically in a lot of ways that I would question. But there was clearly an issue last year with the environment that team played in, the energy that it lost, and how easily discouraged it seemed to be. And last night Notre Dame goes down the field on the opening drive and scores a touchdown. You think they're going to light up the scoreboard, and Louisville responded. And a 14-14 game late in the second quarter, if you don't have all those fumbles, maybe they go to halftime tied, and who knows what happens in the second half. But when losing by 18 points feels like a breakthrough, that last year was awfully dismal. And I think this team has moved away from that.
Tim Sullivan's with us. As somebody who does this, and I am sensitive to it because I know sometimes after a game I'll go back, and I don't do it often, but somebody will send me a link to something the comments that were going on during the game, and I'll have said something and not even realized I said it. And all of a sudden it latches on. It gets a life of its own. You're like, I don't even remember saying that. The reason I bring it up is because I don't think it's easy what they do, and I think Fowler and Herbstreit, by and large, do a good job. But there are a couple of things that – one is a somewhat minor one, although to Liz Scott, I guess it's not a minor one. I'll talk about that in a minute. But the other one you made a point of, Fowler especially, I guess – I guess they both were talking about the fans leaving. And I was like, dude, it's these people aren't going to get home till like 1:30 in the morning. And tomorrow's a work day. It's not a Saturday. I just thought they made a little too much about that. And I know you made a comment about that as well.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a cheap shot. And really, in the context of playing a Monday night game that ends at 11:27 p.m., unreasonable to expect people to stay around. A text from a person who said, some of my relatives are going to be at UPS at 4 in the morning. That's when their shift starts. So, sports is great, but, I've talked about this before, but I do think that there is an attitude that the spectator's time is not valuable. And you play a 3-plus-hour game on a weeknight. What do you expect? I'd like to know what time those guys got up this morning, and whether they had to be at work at 8 o'clock. So, I don't want to make more of an issue of that than it is. And if you talk for 3 hours on a broadcast, you're bound to say something that is, if not stupid, insensitive. But I do think that the TV bears a lot of responsibility for the crowd leaving, and that's because they wanted to play the game on Monday night.
Why they had to start at 8? Why didn't they play at 7 or even 6? I mean, then people get home at a reasonable hour, but that's because they want.
But it's 8 o'clock in the East. It's 5 o'clock in California.
Yep.
You've got all these ratings to consider, and Notre Dame is a national team.
Yep.
And has a following all over the country, and I'm sure that is carefully calculated, just as the kickoff of the Super Bowl is generally at 6:17 or something like that on a Sunday, because that's seen as the optimum time for ratings.
Yep. By the way, they also said this. I don't know. And this is why I say they miss things. I guess the young woman's name is Liz Scott, I'm gathering. She's a Louisville Lady Bird. She's not a cheerleader. And on the one play where Book intentionally throws the ball away, it turns out he hit her right in the face and broke her nose. I didn't realize that because her nose actually is trending on Twitter. That's kind of sad. But they booed. The crowd booed. And Herb Street said, oh, you know, he's outside the tackle box. He throws it. That's clearly, you got to learn the rules to understand what grounding is. And I'm like, dude, they're not booing for the grounding. They're booing because he just clocked the girl right in the kisser. And I didn't realize until I saw the thing today that she actually broke her nose, the poor thing. So the things you miss. Sometimes you're at the stadium. I think they see less than we see on the TV monitors.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, I was not aware of Elizabeth Scott's injury until well after the game had ended, and I saw the video and saw some Twitter messages, and I actually messaged her just to try to confirm that she had indeed broken her nose and offered her my condolences. But she seemed to have a pretty good attitude about it. She talked about how her nose break was trending on on Twitter. I have not heard back from her, but I told the editors before I left last night that we need to track her down. That's a pretty good story, and I'd be fascinated by what Ian Book would have to say about that.
Yeah, let's go to his Twitter page and see if he said anything about that. So
I looked at it last night, and he hadn't reacted. I'm not sure he was aware of it.
Yeah, probably not. He's probably busier doing some other things, but he got her butt good. I mean, it popped her right in a kisser. So, that's a bit unfortunate. All right, well, we got to run. Thank you very much for spending some of your time. We're getting all these texts I want to respond to here in a minute as well, and then we're going to have who? Brett McMurphy, is he joining us? All right, so we got a lot to do. Tim, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure.
All right, Tim Sullivan with us here. Yeah, Liz Scott, did you see? Did you see the...
I saw late last night when I got home her tweet saying that my nose is trending on Twitter, so there's that. And then her friend popped on and said, yeah,
contact me, I'm her agent.
I'm her agent, so yeah. Actually, we were gonna try to get her on, but
what happened? Did you just call her agent?
Well, no, because then I kind of figured I had to go through
protocol.
Well, just I don't know who the coach is now that Todd Sharp isn't there. I'm not sure.
Just write her on Twitter. I guess you won't answer.
Well,
they don't answer.
I thought about just at tweeting her, but I kind of figured, you know, maybe give it a day. Let it breathe a little bit, and then hopefully she can breathe a little bit.
The thing that I feel bad about
is
I'm watching the replay. She's looking right at the ball. I maybe she doesn't pick it up. But, I mean, how did she not at least get her hands up to keep it from pinning her right in the...
Maybe it was one of those things like you're thinking about something like you're staring.
I don't think she knew. I think somebody said, "Hey, look out!" And then she looked up because I don't think she was. They're busy doing their dances and all the stuff.
It's too late by that.
So, at that point,
I don't know. Maybe we should try to get her on.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll add tweet.
Yeah, there you go. Let's go see what we're doing here. I know what we're doing. We're telling you about winning $1 million and how you can do it possibly for free. That's with our friends at FanDuel and Draft. If you like fantasy football, my guess is you do. Tonight, we start our league, run by the Lying Liar, and then the Amtrak's Northeast Corridor Empire Electrons, presented by Ronzoni Pasta, will be
the next pick. Twitter poll. Who's the least popular commissioner? Goodell, Locke, Gary Bettman.
Gary Bettman. $3.5 million on the line, not in our league, but in the one with Draft, because you can get in this. It's called a best ball championship, and here's the beauty of it. It's a snake league, just like you do with your friends, but the fact of the matter is once you set your team, you're done. You don't have to do anything. It's the best players get automatically started for your team, and you'll get the best score every week guaranteed. So once you set it, you can just forget it and follow along as the year goes. There's no salary caps. It's a snake draft. You know that. That's how you do most of your local leagues. And the leagues are starting every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. Just do a draft, and you could be a millionaire 16 weeks later. It doesn't get any easier than that. It's the highest-rated fantasy app. It's available on the App Store or Google Play or online at draft.com. And you heard me say you can play for free. How's that? Well, here's how. For a limited time, you get a free entry into the Best Ball Championship when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code VSHOW. That's right. A free shot at $1 million just by using the promo code VSHOW when you make your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to draft.com and come play for free with the promo code the show.
Before you go to break, I've got a tiny bit
of news.
Of breaking news, courtesy of our Paizan friend, one Paulie B, Paul B, and Cardi. Nope, we got to have the sounder up. He said that Kentucky will get an official visit from Greg Brown III. It will be decided on once the conference schedule is set. That's coming from his dad, Greg Brown Sr. I know you don't care, but there are people who care about recruiting, and he is a top 10 prospect. So Greg Brown will be heading to Kentucky for an official visit. Let's see here. Probably, well, I don't know. It depends on when the conference schedule gets set, but he has made plans to make a second unofficial visit to North Carolina on the weekend of September 27th, for whatever that's worth.
Good Lord.
So.
This Kentucky powerlifter, did you see this story?
I did not, but we do need to get the break. We're 2 minutes late.
No, you're going to tell about a recruiting story.
I'm just saying.
A man who has pumping iron for just 7 years now holds the world record in the raw bench press. That's a bench press where you have to say all profanity. It's a raw bench press.
I thought you could only recover by eating raw steak.
No, raw bench press. He broke the record. His name is Julius Maddox. The previous world record was held by a Russian set in 2015. And his new record. Do you want to take a guess what this guy can bench press?
Like the Mendoza line for like being like, damn, that's a really big bench press, is 600. I think I saw a dude on Twitter bench press 900 pounds.
No, you're way off.
Then it was 600. What this guy did. I knew it was a multiple of three. I'm going to say world record, he did 750.
Close. 739.6 pounds.
Wow.
739.6. They say it's the most controversial lift in powerlifting.
Why? Did he do the little bump thing
that
boosts it up?
I don't know what that means.
However, I feel like that could definitely kill you.
I have trouble, right now getting from the grocery store. I got to hoist up the potatoes to the top shelf in the pantry. That's I got to bend my knees and use my legs for that.
You have to do the little pump up thing, like you hit your pecs. What's he putting on his hands? Oh,
I did that. I did it at my friend David Alkley's house. I used to make his mother laugh, which I enjoyed. So I was being a knucklehead, and I took two giant grapefruits and put them on the floor and made believe they were like a power bar. And I crouched down like I was going to do a clean and jerk, whatever. And I started doing that. And I hyperventilated so much I passed out and I hit my head on her kitchen table. yes. Happy times. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Thanks for being with us. ESPN 680 1057.
Show with Bob Valvano is now right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Texter points out, good point. Marsha Brady got a broken nose by getting it in the face by a football. Somebody should call her. She got a comment from McCormick. What was her first name? No. Did you just blurt out the first girl's name that popped into your head? What the hell was her name? She was here in Louisville. Here we go. A guy who thinks I dropped names. But I was on a radio show. John Ramsey had a radio show back when he was doing the music business. It was with another guy. I forget what his partner's name was. And they had Marsha Brady was promoting something. And I was on the show also. And, oh, my God. And I met her. She's very pretty. I mean, you're a kid. Every kid has a crush on Marsha Brady. Maureen McCormick. There we go. And so we were chatting. And how that came up, I don't know. But I do know that Marsha. Yes. One of the brushes with fame. Hey, roll up your sleeves for the most frightful blood drive around. Come donate blood from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 4th Street Live in front of Fifth Third Bank. This is the 15th year that Actors Theater, Fifth Third Bank, and the American Red Cross have teamed up for this blood drive. And you'll get a gift bag, or as it says on my copy here, a get bag, full of frightening surprises. Receive a special 25th anniversary Dracula t-shirt. All donors will get to sink their teeth into free pizza from the Pizza Bar Louisville. That, by the way, is very good pizza. The one right there. That's seriously. That's I'm impressed by that pizza. And you know I'm a bit of a pizza snob. That's good. Give a pint of blood and get a pint of ice cream from Bluebell Ice Cream. Just as blood is too precious to Dracula, it certainly helps to save lives of hospital patients in need. Every 2 seconds in the U.S., blood is needed to respond to patient emergencies, including accident and burn victims, heart surgery, organ transplants, those receiving treatment for leukemia, cancer, or sickle cell disease. And it's so simple to donate. It isn't painful or invasive. It really does save lives. For more information, visit redcrossblood.org and input the sponsor code Dracula. And don't forget, Actors Theater's Dracula runs from September 7th through October 31st. For more information, go to actorstheater.org. Locke and I will both be downtown tomorrow, broadcasting from the stage on 4th Street Live. So then why'd you tell me to do a read? Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know what to say about that. Brett McMurphy joins us again. Brett, thanks for being with us. First weekend in college football, there was some of the usual one-sided blowouts between the haves and the have-nots, but also some flat-out eye-popping upsets and some closer games, especially in the SEC. What'd you take away from week one here in college football?
Hey, Bobby, I just have a quick question. Do you those get bags... Is that what you give the get back coaches for Halloween?
Maybe.
I'm just curious.
Maybe. I don't. It's a get back. It's the, when they want you to leave, they give it to you. Now get. You gave your blood. Now get. Yeah. And they give it to you and off you go. So
I got you. Well, speaking of body bags, how about a nice segue there? Let's talk about the SEC. Yeah.
Okay.
Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee at the Rocky Top, Rocky Flop, right at the top.
Really?
You know, it was a bad week for the SEC. But you know what? If the SEC goes on and wins a national title, which obviously they've got two, maybe three legitimate contenders, nobody will remember how good or bad the rest of the conference is. And that's kind of how it is every year. You know, I think if Clemson wins a title this year, they're my pick. You know, if we talk a couple of years down the road and say, wow, how good was the ACC? We'll say, you know, we really don't remember, but we do know Clemson won the title. So the good news for the SEC is all their bell cows survived and moved on and looked good. But on the flip side, you know, after the top six teams, the rest of the league looks really very mediocre right now.
Brett McMurphy, you can find on Twitter at Brett_McMurphy, and you retweeted the AP Top 25 poll, and Brett, it underscores your point. I mean, of the top six teams in the country, three of them are from the SEC. So for all the surprising results, there are still people that look at this league with three of the top six and four of the top 10, and I guess if you put Florida in there, it's, what, five of the top 11. So it's,
yeah,
it's still
business as usual.
But is it really business as usual across the board? It seems to me college football earlier in the year has a narrower gap than it used to. College basketball always was the one where you got the eyebrow raising results, but college football, frankly, you go like 3 weeks in, and there were a lot of 66-3 games, but you're not seeing that as much. Is the gap narrowing some?
I agree with what you're saying. I would say, though, I think the top three teams, Clemson, Bama, and Georgia, are significantly better than anybody else in the country. Even as impressive as Oklahoma looked with Terps and Ohio State, I really think after those top three, then I think you have a group of about five or six, maybe seven teams that are a notch below them. And then I really think if you go from 12, 13, 14 to about number 40, you've got teams where anybody could beat anybody. And that's where I think, you know, you see a lot of this parity. And when I do my AP ballot, you know, once I get out of the top 10 or 11 or 12, it's really, you know, it's like drawing straws. You could tell me a team I don't have in here, and I'd say, you know what, you make a great point. They could be in there. I think that's how close it is. But I do think there really is a huge gap between Clemson, Bama, and Georgia. And somebody made the analogy after the Miami-Florida game in week zero is, if that is the nation's number eight team in the country, which obviously they dropped to number 11, but if that is a top 10 team, then my God, how much of a gap is there between the top 10 in the top three teams in Clemson, Bama, and Georgia? And I don't see anything changing. And a perfect example, this week, Clemson playing their toughest game of the year against number 12-ranked Texas A&M, and they are nearly a three-touchdown favorite.
Well, that is amazing. You got that right. I mean, that's shocking. You know, this is I'm trying to think of any other sport where really a team that's, you know, supposedly that close, one of the top of the 100 and whatever it is, the you know, elite level teams, 130 teams, where two of them that are ranked in the top 12 would be three touchdowns separated. I mean, that's I can't think of any other analogy. But let me ask you that. Is that really an aberration, or has that been the case in college football longer than – it's just because it's Alabama and Clemson every year now. We're starting to pay attention to it differently. But has that been the case, and I just really wasn't kind of oblivious to it?
No, Bobby, I don't think it has. I think this is different. I think it's special, certainly, because Clemson and Alabama have ruled college football for the last 5 years. And because of that, they are, whether it's, you know, perception is reality, one of those deals, the reality is they've won all the last four national championships. So the perception is they're much better. They played every year. So I think they get a lot of benefit of the doubt. But you know, we'll see what Texas A&M can do. You know, they had an offensive lineman. I think it was an offensive lineman predict, you know, there will be an upset on Saturday. He didn't specify which game, so he may be right. But, yeah, I mean, I think the sharp people in Vegas will take Texas A&M plus. I think it's down to 17, 18 now. It's dropped that much. So certainly if you can get a top 12 team getting, you know, two touchdowns and a field goal, you take them. But we'll see how the game plays out. Last year, Clemson barely won this game. But remember last year, Trevor Lawrence only attempted 9 passes in this game. Justin Ross only had 1 catch. And Travis Etienne was basically a non-factor. So now basically Clemson's best 3 offensive weapons are at home against an A&M team. And, you know, we'll see. That's why they play the games.
Brett McMurphy's with us. I shouldn't assume anything, but since it's your business, I'm sure you watched at least part of the Louisville game last night. How much, you know, there's a lot of optimism around here about what they did. What did you take away from it?
Absolutely. You know, I thought Louisville played very well. I thought they looked 1,000 times better than last year. I mean, it's not any secret to anybody listening to this right now that the team quit on Bobby Petrino and he quit on them. There was a lot of issues there, and I think that's pretty obvious. And you look at how they played, the turnout for this game, you know, I know it's cliche to say it was Louisville Super Bowl, but in a way it kind of was the first time Notre Dame had come there. And I thought Louisville was tremendous. I know, you know, Scott Satterfield's not into moral victories, but you do have to take some comfort into the fact that, you know, Hawkins put up 122 yards rushing. Louisville averaged 5.3 yards per carry. You're only outgained by 40 yards for the game. Man. And if not for those trifecta fumbles there at the end of the first half, you go into halftime tied at 14. And then, you know, who knows what happens in the second half. So with all that positive in uplifting talk about Louisville, I still think it's going to be tough for them to get 6 wins and get to a bowl game. But maybe they'll prove me wrong. I think they certainly will double last year's win total. I don't know if they can quite get to 6, but I thought it was a very impressive showing. Again, I know, you know, Satterfield's not into moral victories, but I think it's a good step in the right direction. And you just look what he did at Appalachian State. I mean, I see similar development at Louisville, and certainly he's got to get to the point where, you know, these aren't moral victories, but these are wins on the field. And then certainly as you increase that, then be able to knock off, the mighty Clemson Tigers at some point.
But to your point, if they get to 4 or even 5 wins and they're competitive and playing hard and everything that we saw last night, I think it would be a very successful first year for him. I mean, because you got to take into context the starting point. So I think your point's well taken. I'd be remiss. I know you got a minute or two before you got to go. But Kentucky took care of a pretty good Toledo team relatively handily, even though they weren't great, in a day where a lot of their SEC colleagues stumbled a little bit. How significant was their win?
You know, that was big because Toledo's a lot better than I think a lot, the average fan realizes. I mean, they are one of the favorites to win the Mid-American team. And I think, you know, obviously a lot of people are expecting Kentucky to regress a little bit after last year, but certainly they trailed early in that game. They came back and had an impressive win. Toledo scored late. That's kind of misleading. They basically were winning by 21. So, you know, it's a good step for them, but should have no trouble this week. And then they go to Florida because they try to extend the streak, you know, the long-standing streak to 2 consecutive wins against Florida. And then, you know, then you get into the meat of the SEC schedule and, you know, who knows? You know, some of these games, you know, I thought the Missouri game looked tough. Now, that's not so tough. Tennessee, obviously, is not all it's cracked up to be. So I think Kentucky should have no problem getting back to a bowl game. Obviously, they don't want to go, though, from double-digit wins to 6 wins. I don't think that necessarily will be the case. But I think that's a good win. Again, you got to keep in mind, you know, the personnel losses that Kentucky had, the same as you got to keep in mind with Louisville, you know, kind of the limitations they had with who they had coming back going into this year.
I'll let you go, Brett. Come visit with us again. You can find Brett at Twitter, @Brett_McMurphy. He's, of course, plying his trade now for the Stadium Network, and you can find a link to that on Twitter as well. Brett, thanks so much for the time. Good talking to you.
Thanks, Bobby.
All right. Brett McMurphy, we enjoy talking to him. We enjoy talking to you. By the way, somebody texted me and said you didn't say the date of the blood drive. It's tomorrow. We'll be there tomorrow at 4th Street Live.
You donate a pint of blood and you get a pint of ice cream.
Yeah.
How many pints can I give?
No, you just do one. I don't want to hear the giant, oh, he's empty. He's empty. Look at all the ice cream I got, though. Look,
what's your blood type? Well, it was O positive. Now it's Rocky Road.
Exactly. It's from Bluebell Ice Cream, and you'll get a get bag, too, which is nice, and you'll get free pizza. Tasty. I don't think they're going to let me donate, though, because I went to the fair and tried to donate, and I didn't have enough something. Hmm. There's some component missing in my blood.
Yeah, you probably should eat more of that. Or drink more of that.
No, well, drink
it was iron.
Iron, that's right. How'd you remember? How'd you know that?
Because I care about you. Believe it or not.
Thank you, honey. It's very sweet.
You know who cares about you?
Who?
New York Mike.
What? Oh, he wants to gloat?
Yeah, he wants to gloat. The man earned himself a victory.
New York Mike, come on. Were you sweating a little bit? It was getting a little close for you there, dude.
No, Bob, do me a favor. I never gloat.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry then.
I swear to God, I never gloated in my life.
All right.
Hey, listen, I wanted to know if you got the 2 items that I left you there when I came down with the tickets about the book and how to do the point spread. Did you get those items?
Oh, Nick's got them. He never gave them to me, though. He's hoarding them. I want to see them. Yeah. Nick, when are you going to show those to me? I need to see those.
Hey, Bob,
they're on my nightstand.
Bob, that book has, from the beginning of it to the end of it, it has all information for 10 years. I think I better sit down with you and somehow explain it, how it goes. And I know I like to explain the point spread so you don't have to, you know, try and figure it out. I want you to know it for positive because you're a friend of mine. You're a Paisan Goomba.
Well, we'll go to Mill and Tony's and over some nice pasta, we'll figure the thing out. That'd be great.
So, I know. A white pizza, okay, with no tomatoes.
Oh, that's good, too. I like that. I do like that.
You just let me know, and then can I call you Thursday for the Green Bay-Chicago game?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it, because you have now hit 801 out of 802 of your last picks, I think, is the number we're up to.
You're right. I like the way you did that. So it's 16 out of 17.
That's impressive. That's quite a run, dude. I got to admit, it's all on the record, too. We have,
it is.
It's all recorded on the air, so we'll talk on...
Morning.
You did what now?
I got to tell you who I re-up with this morning.
Who's that? Diener?
after 6 months, he said, please call back for the games. And I said, okay, you know, we're not mad at each other. Nothing's bad. There was never a bad blood. But I'm solidified with you. Do you understand?
All right. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I don't want retread information that you give the angry little man. We want fresh stuff here. So,
well, that's what I'm talking about. Is that what you want?
Yeah, I want the fresh, good stuff here. Then you can talk with him. He's a friend of ours. But, you know, hey, we brought you into the family here, so we should get first
you
dibs.
You did. It was about 40. Do you remember how you did it?
I really don't. What did we do? What did I do?
You were talking to the listeners, and for some reason, you said, I really wish I could have a New York bookie here, and then I called you right away. I said, listen, I want to call one of the biggest bookies in New York, Jimmy Burke. So the next day, you know what you said to me?
What's that?
You said, New York Mike, I looked up Jimmy Burke. But see, that's all you said to me. I don't know if you looked up Jimmy Burke, the mob guy, Jimmy Burke, the baseball player, Jimmy Burke, the singer.
I don't remember that whole episode, so I really couldn't tell you. But I did.
I'm glad you did, Bob.
Jimmy Burke. I didn't realize there were other Jimmys out there. Jimmy Burke.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Burke is very featured in that book you gave me. That guy can't stand him, though. Henry Hill, he couldn't stand him.
Hell, I can't stand him. How do you like that?
I know. He's a yeah.
I hate him with a fervor.
Yeah, Nick.
He's gone, so I can't do anything. He's gone. Now.
I know he is. And we got a gone, too, because we're out of time. I'll talk to you Thursday, Mike. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. We are at the top of the hour, and that means we got to step aside so that Mr. Sweeney can come in with the take. I know he's going to have
Strebel and Matt Fortuna.
Oh, really? Wow, that's a lot of different guys. That's way more guys than just Andy. He's going to talk about the decision before the half to try and score with the ball late and how Petrino. I think that's. I understand, you know, the point being, if a guy's on his honeymoon as a new coach, you should still critique him as you would other coaches. But I do, and I think he did a great job, and he's done a great job so far getting his team regrouped from the train wreck that was last year. We'll talk more tomorrow, unless you know something I don't. It's ESPN Radio.
With UPS, future you graduates from Metro College with zero debt. How? As a package handler, you'll have a great job while you attend Metro College, and 100% of your tuition will be covered. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at UPS.
We are ESPN Louisville, your home for the college football playoff, NFL, the Final Four, and best sports talk. Download the ESPN Louisville app today. Delivered by UPS Jobs Kentucky.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.